From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It's time again for The Media Project, your chance for some commentary, analysis, and even a little insight into media issues of the week. Rex Smith, the usual host of this program, is away this week, so I'm Mike Spain, the associate editor at the Times Union, filling in for my boss today.
Again? He's away again? Well, why do I have to put up with this?
Editors are entitled to vacation. I know
they
that's a concept that's difficult for people to appreciate. And they're always necessary. I'm here with WAMC's Dr. Alan Chartok. He's the president and CEO of WAMC and a columnist and commentator and professor emeritus. That was him talking right there. Hello, Alan.
Hey, Mike. Or as we say around here, Mikey. He likes it.
Yeah, the old life cereal commercial. Also with us is Dr. Kaylin Brown. She's the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose in Albany, New York. And Judy Patrick, the Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association. Welcome.
Yes, hello.
Thanks,
hello,
Mike.
Hello. And Mike, you're probably back at the plant doing Rex's other job.
Oh, there's always things to do. You know, this is the first media project that has been recorded since the tragedy in Annapolis, Maryland, where a man shot his way into a newsroom at the Capital Gazette and killed five people, two editors, two writers, and an advertising salesperson. Now, first, this was a horrifying and sad event, and it's shaken the journalism community. The shooter was a person who had a grudge against the local newspaper. He had unsuccessfully sued the Gazette after they truthfully reported about him pleading guilty to harassment over social media of a former girlfriend. Many have discussed the broader implications. We don't know whether he was influenced by the current wave that is demonizing journalists. We have a president that demonizes the media as purveyors of fake news and calls it the enemy of the people. But it also begs another question, and that's one that everybody in newsrooms are talking about now around the United States. Are we safe enough? Are we taking enough precautions to protect ourselves? And Judy, as a veteran editor at the Gazette newspapers in Schenectady, New York, you have some experience with angry readers.
Right. I think we all do. We all get those calls where people will just berate you and call you vile names. And every reporter, photographer, and editor is used to it. I mean, I even had my tires slashed at one point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, this seemed different. You wonder, this person was mad for a long time, but it was now that he decided to take action and go into that newsroom and shoot as many people as he could. I mean, he barred the back door, the exit, so that was his aim. You don't want to overreact at this point, but this is something that surprised me, and it's hard to surprise me.
You know, there must be, I'm sorry, Kaylin, I know we're going to hear from you on this, but I have to tell you, there is no news organization in this country which did not start to have meetings immediately about making their places safer. I've been at the TU, Mike, a number of times, and you guys are pretty good. I mean, it's hard to get into the TU, but if somebody wants to, they can. And that's the thing. The other day, somebody came here. We have a strict protocol about not letting anybody in the building unless they buzz in and tell you who they are and the rest of it. But somebody came in and immediately somebody materialized out of nowhere and pushed themselves right up against the person in front of them and came into the room. And when they said to him, this guy who clearly had issues, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I wanted to see who was on the radio." But if that was somebody
another motive.
Yeah. So in other words, there are ways that people can do this stuff.
Yeah, it's frightening. It's the conversation we've all been having.
Well,
in the course of reporting news, frequently reporters are writing stories and researching stories that have some negative connotation. There's something has gone wrong. And if something has gone wrong, the readership and the audience reads that, and people who may have been a part of that story or are affected by that story often become angry. The reporter's job is to find the truth. And I was reading just in the past week how much courage that reporters have to do their jobs. And I never used to think about it that way until I had a graduate student get up in front of the class at the end of a semester to deliver her final project. And she was very uncomfortable having to introduce herself to sources and get more information from sources. But she stood in front of the class and said, "It was one of the bravest things I ever did, interviewing people." And that wasn't even for anything that had any sort of confrontational aspect to it. So reporters are brave individuals. They truly are.
Do you think there's a difference between the way men and women see that? In other words, women can always be set upon. So do you think when she stood up and said that, that it may have something to do with gender?
You know, I had just as many men reporters and photographers call me and say, "I don't feel safe in this situation." And I would say, "Get out of there." So I've had more men ask me that, call in as an editor and say, "Hey, this is not a safe place for me to be." And I said, "Okay, leave then."
Reporters and photographers face a lot of danger. Photographers take photos at tragedies. Sure. We had a photographer who was covering a confrontation between police in Albany one time and somebody with a gun, and she was up there doing her job as a journalist recording the photo, but she was in danger. Just this year, down in North Carolina, a videographer and a reporter for a television station died when they were out during a storm covering the major storm, and a tree fell and hit their van, and they were killed. So journalists put themselves...
Of course, that could happen when you walk outside your house.
Yes, it is, but they go to where the danger is.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Knock on doors not knowing what they're going to find after when they're investigating after a homicide or some horrific event, and they do have to get out there every day and just kind of ply their trade. So it is raising those issues. But the problem, Alan, is that it's all happening in an atmosphere where our profession has been demonized, people think that we are purveyors of fake news. What do you say about that?
Well, you know, Mike, people never liked newspapers before this president. He, of course, has made it a lot worse by demonizing the press.
Well, what to do? And that's the question. And one of the people who spoke out on this was Marty Baron, the editor of the Washington Post, who was also editor at the Boston Globe and brought them to the Pulitzer Prize, you know, with their coverage of the horrific scandals involving priests and abuse of children. And he was speaking out at a conference, and he says, "We need to open up our process. We need to let people see what we're doing." Is that something that might work, Judy?
You know, we talk about the trust. We have to build the trust so people will trust us more, will increase our credibility. But that also encourages a higher level engagement, which means you have to get out there in the public, which means you open yourself up to those attacks. But this whole idea of showing people who the reporters are, show all the different kinds of people who are reporters, explaining the process, because there, to be quite frank, there are a lot of people that don't know the difference between an op-ed piece and an editorial.
Sure.
And a viewpoint. And explaining that might help. I mean, certainly we have always assumed everybody knows everything about our business. They know what a headline is. They know what a nut graph is. We need to do more to explain our process, and I think that will build trust.
Well, Can we start right now, Alan? If you wouldn't mind, because I'm
not
guessing our listeners probably don't know what Judy just referred to as the nut graph, and that's a big point of emphasis in a journalism classroom. So the nut graph is the paragraph, sometimes it's paragraph 3 or 4 or 5, that really lays out what this story is about for the reader. It gives the nuts and bolts of the story so that the reader is grounded in what am I going to find when I continue to read through this story. And I agree, we need to use education as a way to tell people this is how journalism works. And I believe truly it should begin at the elementary school level.
I want to take a little bit of issue with you guys for a change. I have met reporters who are quite nasty, and I've been on the other end of the phone with them. I even have met reporters who, at the instigation of their editors, either a small town weekly or, you know, even a bigger newspaper, maybe closer to home here, have really just been on a search and destroy mission when it comes to somebody who has a little bit more fame than they do. And it really has been an ugly situation. And so I don't think all reporters are what you would hope they would be, Kaylin, because you, the professor, have a set of rules as to what good behavior is on the part of a reporter. But, you know, reporters are people, too, and sometimes you get
messages. Are we talking about polite? Or are we talking about somebody being in an adversarial situation where they're reporting a story that's unfavorable to the subject, and the subject is evading the question or doesn't want the information coming out, or may be open about it, but it's going to portray
Good trying, Mike. Yeah. But I think that there are some nasty reporters, and I think there are some nasty editors, and I think sometimes they have personal agendas, and they find reporters who, in an effort to advance themselves, will behave despicably.
Well, it defies the journalism ethic to be dishonest.
It may, but it's. I'm not talking about what should be. I'm talking about what is.
Right. I think it's the exception rather than the rule.
Yes, I'm sure you're right.
And we are a profession of people, and we will make mistakes. And also, let's be quite honest, there are some publications that are out for the sensational story.
But there's some nasty people out there, right? I mean, look, Judy, come on. I have great respect for you, but let's have an honesty question here. You've met some nasty reporters, haven't you, in your life?
Nasty is a tough word for me because I'm not really sure what that means.
Nasty, I go back to what I said. Some reporters, sometimes they're in a situation where they are interviewing somebody who's like a hostile witness. And they need to confront that person and bring them back to the question and not let them evade the answer and maybe identify some facts. And it sometimes will appear like a DA interrogating somebody on the witness stand.
Yeah.
You have someone who doesn't want to tell you something and you're trying to get them to tell you something. And that happens, you see that happen at a presidential press conference where people are confronting the president with facts.
Yeah, but that
And it does portray them as looking mean-spirited and going after the guy, but it is hard not to appear that way when you're doing your job the right way in certain situations.
So sorry, Mike. I'm not buying it.
I know, Alan. I know. Am I to say that every single journalist has upheld the ethic and that there's not people who have done it wrong? I'm not saying that at all.
Mike, yeah. Lightning from the sky question.
Right.
You tell a lie, out comes the lightning. Now, I want to know, have you, Michael, ever met a reporter who you thought was just plain nasty?
I've met a lot of people who are nasty, and some of them have been reporters, so the answer is yes.
You get to live.
Okay.
But, Kaylin, I know you had a question you wanted to raise in this show, didn't you?
I do, but first I want to just mention that Darwin is a good place to look for this, because I think there's self-selection. I think that
Darwin, Indiana?
So I feel that reporters who are too confrontational would be selected out of the herd, because if they're constantly getting complaints against them, or if the confrontation outweighs the productivity and there's not a return on investment, that reporter won't last long in the field.
They won't succeed. That's exactly right.
I could not disagree with you guys. I could name times, places, and people who have succeeded for many years.
Well, we know some nasty people who've made it high up in the ranks of journalism, I guess, and that doesn't say that it's right.
But one of the problems with this conversation is if we focus too much on the negativity, right?
Exactly.
We lose sight of the positivity, which is the majority of what journalism is
doing. The vast majority. What we're talking about is an aberration. What we need to underscore is that there are thousands of journalists out there doing their job every single day, honestly, faithfully, upholding ethics, etc.
I agree.
And that's the problem. A few bad apples and a few confrontations and some nasty, untrue remarks from people high up in public office have hurt the image of this profession, and things have to be done to correct that, to let the public know the value of journalism to democracy.
Mike, I couldn't agree with you more about everything you just said. Nevertheless, that's not what we were talking about.
We were talking about the bad apples.
But let's go back to the Capital Gazette, which was a community newspaper where people who probably weren't paid very much were out there covering zoning boards, school boards, Boy Scout, Eagle Scout award ceremonies. Let's talk about the thousands upon thousands of reporters out there doing that job under adverse conditions. And for what? And what happened? They get murdered.
It's terrible.
It's really awful.
Well,
before we move on, I want to say you're listening to The Media Project, a presentation of Northeast Public Radio. And with us today are Dr. Alan Chartok, Dr. Kaylin Brown, Judy Patrick, and I'm Mike Spain. Now, there's a plan in the state of New Jersey, a very unusual one. And as the director of editorial development for the New York Press Association, Judy, you might have something to say about it, is that they are now putting aside $5 million in government, you know, public money for the Civic Information Consortium. It's a first-of-a-kind nonprofit with a mission to revive and strengthen and transform local media in New Jersey. Are you uncomfortable with public money going to bolster journalism?
You know, there is a tinge of uncomfort about this proposal. Of course, you don't want whatever news product is produced to be influenced by the fact that it's being subsidized by public money. But I have the idea that perhaps this money would go to help people in low-income communities buy newspapers or subscribe to their daily newspaper, which would be to promote literacy and to promote that kind of engagement that may be missing as the digital realm expands and access to news becomes more expensive.
It says the consortium will fund projects to improve the quantity and quality of news and information in New Jersey communities. It will benefit longstanding and startup news outlets, and it will even enable some to launch media literacy programs, as you say, and civic engagement programs that involve the media and members of the public.
You like it, Mike?
Well, I'm uncomfortable with public money, but if the money goes to a consortium that is not controlled by the government, but by these universities like the College of New Jersey, Montclair State University, New Jersey Institute of Technology, and Rutgers University, Rowan University, you know, fine colleges like that, that actually run the program, colleges get grants from the government all the time to do things, I'm not so uncomfortable. But let's ask the college professor here.
Well, I absolutely think this is a wonderful initiative in New Jersey, and both their houses have passed it, and it's waiting on the governor's desk. Perhaps it'll be signed before this show is put on air. But I think that any initiative that helps to shore up local news coverage is important, because local news coverage is suffering. And that's just a fact that's happening in the industry. But I think that if you have an initiative that could support getting more information to the electorate to help them be informed, then that is fulfilling journalism's role. Again, I would hope that those colleges would be handling a good part of the work. Alan, why do you think New Jersey is the state that is moving forward on this progressive legislation before the state of New York?
Because they have a bunch of Democrats over there right now. Let me say, I think this idea stinks. Now, somebody will write in and say, you're a hypocrite because public radio takes some public funding. But you have to look back on that and say, Ronald Reagan hated NPR, and he went after it with everything he could to deprive that money. So that in the end, the way that it happened is they changed from giving money directly to NPR to the member stations, and then the member stations are asked to cough up all of that and a lot more for National Public Radio. But yes, the idea that we take public money at all makes me uncomfortable. I'm afraid I may hear from some of my colleagues in the public radio about this. But I don't like the idea because I think I know politicians. Now, look, I've been very critical of Andrew Cuomo on occasion. Very critical.
The governor of New York.
Yes. We know that the accusations against Cuomo are that he gives money to people who give him money, right? I mean, we know that. Or who play the ball with him. I talked just the other day to a wonderful assembly person, I never mentioned gender, who said to me, I said, well, why are you so afraid to call him out on some of these things? And that person said, because I have bills he has to sign before him that he has to sign. Well, I don't like the idea that an Andrew Cuomo, in addition to giving out money for who gets the Buffalo $1 billion, would be giving money to have the final say. And if he didn't, as you say, Mike, if he gave money to College of New Jersey, which I have to say my daughter teaches, or Rutgers, or where I taught, or one of those places, sooner or later, when they get angry enough, they're going to say, cut the program, not cut the individuals who are getting it. So I have real problems with this proposal.
But one of the things you'll undoubtedly hear after saying what you just said is that there are some very tiny public radio stations in obscure parts of the country that WAMC has been extraordinarily fortunate in having a very dedicated public come forth every time you have a fund drive and you quickly raise $1 million, no question. But not everybody has that size of an audience.
Well, I'm not going to argue that with you, Mike. Yeah. You're right. You're absolutely right.
So it could be the difference between going on the air and going off the air in some of these cases.
No, it's true. You're absolutely right, and that should have been said by me. But you're right. It's one of the reasons I can live with it.
You know, news organizations have done a pretty good job, not always, but most often, of respecting the wall between advertising and what we do. I mean, a lot of our money comes from advertising. You know, the true test of whether or not this we're really respecting the division is if there's some sort of corruption in the grant and the newspapers actually write about it. That will be cool.
So the Free Press Action Fund is the organization that sort of initiated this New Jersey legislation, and they are supposed to be responsible for overseeing this funding. So perhaps that would help build a layer of protection, while obviously the purse strings would lie with their legislature. The fact that the money might be taken away is no reason not to try this initiative in the first place.
Ah, but there is the problem. When people anticipate...
He who giveth will take it away.
When people anticipate that it will be taken away, there are people maybe in public radio, maybe, who say, we can't do this or we can't say this because we don't want the money taken away. This is how we survive. Don't you see?
That's one of the points Marty Baron made, Washington Post editor, made in his speech, is that journalists need courage. They need not to be afraid whether or not that funding will be taken away, whether or not that advertiser will cancel his ad campaign, whether the subscriber will cancel their subscription. You need the courage to do the story no matter what.
And none of you in this room have ever seen a newspaper bend over backwards because of a potential loss of an advertiser. For example, let's just say an automobile dealer does something bad to a kid and they're your biggest advertiser. Yes, you'll put the story in, but will it be on page one or will it be on page 11?
It may not be. It'll depend on its news value. But I can tell you at the Times Union in Albany, we have offended advertisers and lost advertisers and some big advertisers because we refused to not publish. You know, we went ahead and published stories that were unfavorable. It might be government judgments against them. It might be crimes against individuals. And it does cost you, and it costs a lot at a time when it really hurts, but
okay.
We've done it.
Okay, let me concede that the Times Union is a very good newspaper and has very good leadership, which would not buckle. That goes from the publisher and the editor and others. But I have seen examples of newspapers in my time which, in fact, have taken actions that I consider to be reprehensible.
Well, it just goes to show you, at a time when newsrooms are shrinking, when newspaper advertising is down, largely because of the onslaught of the internet and changing the whole dynamic in media today, and until newspapers can figure out how to get their share back out of that whole process, they are vulnerable, and advertisers can exercise influence, and it's painful. It's painful.
And, you know, the threat of a lawsuit, for example, when you need courage against that. One of the things that Baron talked about was a lot of newspapers can't afford the cost of defending itself against a libel suit, especially a frivolous one.
And that's, I think, Judy, where it happens more. They get threatened for lawsuits. They have a story that may be defensible in court, but it will bankrupt them defending it in court if the person on the other side has a very deep pocket and can inflict a lot of pain on them. So a lot of newspapers steer away from stories that could get them into court. Well, that kind of wraps things up today. We're just about out of time. I want to say thanks to Dr. Alan Chartok, to Kaylin
Graham,
and to Judy Patrick for joining us. And I'm Mike Spain. Thanks for listening to The Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Kaylin Brown is Chair of the Department of Communication at the College of St. Rose. Judy Patrick is the Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association, and Mike Spain is the Associate Editor of the Times Union. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go.
to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.